The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, uupinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Republican gubernatorial candidate Andrew Giuliani. I think I remember that name from somewhere. Is that a help or a hurt?
Now, are you talking about the first name Andrew, or are you talking about the last name Giuliani?
Definitely talking
about an Andrew recently in Albany that certainly has caused some hell. So.
Definitely talking about the first name Andrew. No, because you might be confused with another Andrew. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the family name Giuliani. Is it helpful or hurtful?
Well, I think for me, more than anything, when I look at my father and see, you know, the greatest mayor in the history of New York City, one of the greatest prosecutors in our country, you know, I'm a proud son. I'll let the political prognosticators say whether it's helpful or hurtful. What I can tell you is certainly in his advice, in what we've been talking about, in how he's been able to help guide me throughout this campaign and throughout my life, I can tell you it's been extremely helpful. And I think that's why in every single independent poll for the Republican nomination, I'm either leading or within the margin of error. And I think a lot of that has to do with his advice. And coming down the final stretch of the last month before the primary, I know his advice is going to be more valuable than ever.
I can absolutely understand that. So how is it to have two politicians in the same family?
It's terrible. It's the worst. You know, Alan, I joke around and I say I hate career politicians, and I may be even worse because I'm a politician out of the womb. I try to jump in the shower and wash the filth out, and it never actually comes out. You know, but I will say this. I say, as politicians go, I would say the least classified, I'd say that as politicians might be Rudy Giuliani and Donald Trump, and those are two people that I spent time and certainly learned from and consider mentors.
You and I both have been raised in Manhattan. What has that made of you?
Well, we were just separated by a park, I think, in a couple of years there.
Yeah, maybe 30, you know, 40, 50 years, something like that. Yeah.
You know, I think it was...
Wait. Are you telling me that you lived on the east side?
I lived on the east side. That's correct.
Oh,
that
boy.
Absolutely correct.
Now you got a fight on your hands.
86. I know. Well, you know, I can tell you the only thing, and my father said this at my wedding and when he gave his speech. He said, you know, I was raised, obviously, as a Republican, or I raised him to be a Republican, but, you know, we have members of our family that went the other way. You know, I raised him to be a good Catholic, but the world knows some of my indiscretions. The only thing that I would have disowned him for was if he was not a Yankee fan. And he felt responsible for my union with my wife because I met her at Yankee Stadium. So I think that's the one thing that can probably unite us, a love for baseball.
That's good stuff. Okay, let me start. In 2016, you volunteered on the Trump campaign in surrogate relations, traveling to the Republican and Democratic National Conventions and all three presidential debates. What was all of that like?
Well, it was incredible. I mean, to be on a presidential campaign, I'd obviously, you know, been on campaign since I was little. But to be involved in a presidential campaign as you get down to the very end, and especially a campaign that was as close as that, was pretty amazing. I mean, I remember specifically the day before the election being in Scranton, Pennsylvania, where, you know, then Private Citizen Trump had a rally the day before, and making sure we were trying to get as many Pennsylvania voters out there as possible. You know, I think a lot of people thought at that time it was a fool's errand because a Republican hadn't won Pennsylvania in either five or six presidential cycles. But to win that and to play a, you know, small part in it certainly was exhilarating and certainly a moment that I'll be telling my daughter about for the rest of my life.
So let me ask you about how you learn when you're in a political family and other things. I want to throw out a name and ask you for your impressions about the politics of his career, and that's Andrew Cuomo. What do you think?
Well, I think in looking certainly at our personalities, we are two very, very different people. You know, I would say even as politicians go, and I've been around a lot of them, Andrew Cuomo dominates from a narcissistic standpoint. I also think that there's an issue certainly with integrity, as we've seen over all the scandals that popped up throughout his administration, especially in that third term regarding, obviously, his book deal. I think the nursing home scandal certainly is a big one that doesn't get enough talk in some of the press. You know, my impression of Andrew Cuomo is somebody who is a skilled politician and a tactician, but somebody who certainly is probably more corrupt than most politicians that you deal with. And coming from Albany, that's saying something.
You are, of course, running for governor of New York, and you have a famous political name, Giuliani, as well as a famous first name, Andrew. So my question is this. You joined the Trump administration as associate director of the Office of Public Liaison in 2017. In 2019, you were promoted to special assistant to the president. What was that like? Did you talk to Trump? Did you know him?
Oh, regularly. You know, look, I've known the president for over 25 years. And I think that was one of the, you know, unique things probably about my role, which is how much time I actually did spend with him, even before I was promoted. You know, I remember third week in office on a Saturday, he called me into the Oval Office. It was just him and one or two other people, and it was kind of a little more of a relaxed meeting. And he talked specifically about regulatory reform and his economic agenda. And what he simply said was, look, I know that you're working in this Office of Public Liaison. As much as you want to meet with this person in D.C., that person in D.C., this trade association head, I want to make sure that we are reaching out to our small business owners and to our Fortune 500 CEOs to help craft our public policy from an economic standpoint. I think that was really educational from my perspective in terms of exactly what he wanted from an economic situation in the Trump administration, because he looked at it and said, hey, look, you know, government has not worked. It's been so bloated for such a long time from an economic standpoint. I want to make sure that the people who sign the front of the check, not necessarily the back of the check, are the ones that have a say over the public policy of this country. And I think that's why he was able to keep that promise that he made for every regulation he signed into law, he would cut to. That number was over 8-1 by the time he walked out of office.
Well, let me ask you this. So is your association with Trump helpful or hurtful?
Well, I think it's helpful. I think, you know, I've heard certainly kind of the political pundits say anybody who's associated with Trump cannot win. And I say simply this. Look, anybody with an R in front of their name, they're going to associate with Trump. I remember last election when Cuomo tagged Mark Molinaro as Trump's mini-me. Now, Mark is a guy who never supported President Trump from what I can remember, and still he was tagged with that. I think more than anything, you have to be genuine to New Yorkers. And that's kind of one of the things, Alan, I always promised myself, having been around politics my entire life. You know, you see people that are genuine, and sometimes they get their stuff done, sometimes they don't. And you see people that are disingenuous, kind of the slimy politician that everybody knows. And I always said to myself, you know what? More than anything, I'm going to be genuine to voters. I'm going to tell them exactly what it is. I'm not going to run away from the fact that I worked 4 years for President Trump. I'm not going to run away and change my name from Giuliani if they think it's not popular at a time. I'm going to be genuine and let the chips fall where they may.
And that's what you're doing. After leaving the White House, you worked as an on-air contributor and political analyst for Newsmax Television. As one pundit to another, how was that?
It was great. I'll tell you what, you know, so much of the focus of my career has been on the political side. And that's obviously something that, you know, you look at my father, but what a lot of people don't know is that my mother actually was a journalist for 35 years, still is, and works on CUNY TV. And so to be able to spend, it was only about 3 months, but to be able to spend that time and actually anchor some shows on the weekend, it was really an amazing experience. And it's great adrenaline when you're actually taping live and doing that. But I really, really enjoyed it. And obviously, myself and Mr. Ruddy, we have a good relationship. I think actually there may end up being a debate on Newsmax, a Republican debate, toward the end of June before our primary. So I'm hopeful that that comes to fruition so that way voters can hear all the candidates and hear us duke it out.
So when it comes down to where you were influenced, maybe I'm being too much of a Freudian here, was it by mama or papa?
Oh, good question. You know what? I think we need a couch and we need an hour-long session to talk about that right there. No, look, I think it was by both of them. And I also actually think it was by a bunch of different guys in the NYPD. Let me explain. Obviously, when my father was in office, I had a protective detail on me, the intelligence division. One of those men, retired first grade detective, was my confirmation sponsor. About a half dozen of them I still talk to on a weekly basis, and I'm still very close with. And day in and day out, getting to be with these fine gentlemen and women who, you know, risk their lives every single day and would literally take a bullet for you was an incredible influence on me. And it helped me understand my father's perspective also, as he grew up in a household with five different uncles that were of the NYPD and one from the FDNY. So for me, I would say it was my mother, my father, and a bunch of these fine detectives from the NYPD Intelligence Division.
Can you remember, Andrew Giuliani, an incident in which you really needed that protective group?
Well, I do remember after one of the events in the late 90s that there was a threat on my life, and they ended up adding bumping the detail up from two to four people for a while. So thankfully, there was never an incident where I had to get rushed out or this or that. But I do remember that as a kid. And obviously, at that point, you're starting to look at the internet, you're starting to read things. So, you know, that there's this threat on your life when you're 12 years old. But I think that's part of, I think that's part of growing up in the public eye. This is, stuff that unfortunately happens. This should never happen to a kid, but it's stuff that happens. And Alan, the way I always look at it, and I'm kind of more of a naturally optimistic person, is that for every negative thing that ended up happening, unique negative thing that happened, I had four or five different amazingly positive opportunities that happened to me. So I was very blessed growing up.
You know, George Pataki, of course, I don't have to tell you, is a Republican. New York State is a Democratic state, but George Pataki won, and he won, I believe, three times. That's a lot of times. Can you replicate that as a Republican running in Democratic New York State?
Well, I am a big believer in term limits, so I certainly hope to replicate it two times, and then I love to have a conversation on how we actually can limit terms out. But I think so. I think right now, if you look at kind of sentiment amongst New Yorkers, that they really are yearning for change. And we can look kind of more at the national ideas when we come and look at 2021, what we saw in New Jersey, what we saw in Virginia. And we could also look locally at what happened in 2021, specifically in Nassau, in Suffolk, in Albany County outside of the city, what we saw in Erie County. I think we saw a lot of people that are yearning for some common sense. They're yearning for somebody to understand that, hey, look, crime has gone up all around the state. We need to have a solution that's data-driven in order to fix this. I believe we present the clearest solution of all the candidates, including the incumbent.
I was interested in reading your curriculum vitae, that you are on the board of the United States Holocaust Museum. And I wondered, why your interest in that?
Well, as a matter of fact, I was at the Israel Day Parade. It was incredible. For me, I would say simply this. My wife grew up under Soviet oppression the first couple years of her life. Her mother grew up for 46 years under Soviet oppression. She remembers specifically when the Red Army actually took her father to Siberia, to a prison camp, because he was resisting the Soviet armies. And for me, it grew out a lot earlier than that. But when I look, obviously, at the mission of the U.S. Holocaust Memorial, not just in Washington, D.C., but around the world, to make sure that this never happens again, one of the things that I try to focus on specifically with the council is looking at genocide around the world when we talk about the Uyghur Muslims, and calling that out and making sure that we're doing everything that we possibly can to not turn a blind eye, whether or not it's hate toward Jews around the world or whether it's hate toward the Uyghur Muslims. I think this is something that the mission of the museum is never again, and it's something that I think about often.
Now, you've never held political office before. You're competing for the nomination against Representative Lee Zeldin and County Executive Astorino. So how do you compensate for not having held office, or should you, when you run against these guys?
Yeah, well, look, I think more than anything, it's presenting plans and seeing if it's something that it strikes with voters. You know, when we look at the Republican primary, you know, the Congressman Zeldin's experience in Albany is saying that Andrew Cuomo would make a good president and rubber stamping his budgets, basically approving every single one of them. I don't know if that's necessarily good experience and the kind of experience that we want that will have the backbone to actually change Albany the way that I believe needs to be altered. So for me, it's a matter of making sure we go out there and make sure every single day we're presenting solutions that are going to work specifically for the 19.5 million New Yorkers, not just for the party bosses that try to push you over the finish line, but actually for every single everyday New Yorker, whether they're business owners, job creators, whether they're worried about getting on the subway and whether they're going to be safe. Obviously, we saw the tragic shooting the other day in New York City. You know, these are the people that I think about every single day when I go into work or when I give a campaign speech.
You know, the latest Siena poll found you on top when it comes to name recognition. People know that name. But your unfavorable ratings were higher than any of the other candidates. Maybe that's because they were attaching that name to your father as opposed to you. So how can you win?
I think it's just continuing to get out there and continuing to get our message out there. And as I said before, you know, letting the chips fall where they may. That's why I'm very excited about. We have four debates that are scheduled in June. I'm really looking forward to that. I think the more that voters and New Yorkers get to hear my message, I think the more we're going to attract over to us. And Alan, I'm very confident that we're going to be the nominee come June 28th. And I think we have a great shot on November 8th as well.
We are talking to Andrew Giuliani. You know the last name. He's running for governor. And it raises a number of other questions. I wanted to start with the mass shooting in Buffalo. So where do you stand on gun control? And what about the coming Supreme Court decision on concealed carry? Do you think we need to change the laws? Do you really want people walking around with guns hidden in their clothing?
Well, first and foremost, the law that was passed seemed to fail in this instance. If the red flag law that had passed actually would have been implemented, then this guy would not have gotten a gun. To me, I have questions for the governor, and frankly, I have questions for the Federal Bureau of Investigation. When this guy in June of last year made the statements that he was going to shoot up his school and New York State Police had him in custody for 36 hours, why did the New York State Police let them go? Is that a resources issue? What did at the time Governor Cuomo and then Governor Hochul, as she took office less than 2 months later, know about this guy? Did they know about this guy? Is there something in the chain of command? And also the Federal Bureau of Investigation, we've seen get more and more, and obviously we're seeing this now from a national standpoint with the Durham and Sussman stuff that's going on. But was the FBI actually focused on a guy like this instead of maybe potentially focused on political opposition to the current president of the United States? I think as we look time and time again at where the FBI has focused their resources, they've unfortunately gone after conservatives over the last 5 years. And Alan, I think we need to be focused more on making sure that a madman like this does not get a gun. And another thing I propose, I would love, in instances like this, when we're talking about cop killers, for the death penalty, for capital punishment to be on the books. There has not been a capital punishment that has been carried out in New York State since 1963, I believe. I think in 2007 it was taken off the books. Could be wrong about that last date, but I know that in the last couple of decades it was taken off the books. I think that should be an option when you think about the heinous crime that this disgusting madman committed.
Mm-hmm. You also have a survey, we understand, which asks what issues New Yorkers, and particularly New York Republicans, I believe, need to tackle to earn your vote. So what are they telling you?
Well, here's one of the interesting things, Alan. You know, when we talk about Republicans, independents, and even most Democrats, the number one issue right now, certainly if you live in an urban area, is crime. That is the number one issue that is independent. Now, for Republicans, that's over 80%. And for Democrats, that number seems to be in the mid to high 50s. So you could see a little bit of a difference in the number, but it still is the leading, or I should say it's of the top three issues of Republicans and Democrats across the state. But also, I think when we're looking beyond that, I think it's New York being one of the highest tax states and overregulated states. That's for job creators on both sides of the aisle. I think the mandate has been certainly something that we've seen that has probably had more independents and more Democrats cross the political aisles than anything else. Any time that I've gone to rallies against some of the mandates, it's probably what I'll tell you, which is so interesting, is you probably have less Republicans there than you do non-affiliated independents and even some Democrats. A lot of people that go to these rallies, they never were interested in politics before now. And maybe, unfortunately, they've had a loved one or they themselves have been laid off because they've chosen that they don't want to get the jab.
You have a recall petition on your website. That's ny4giuliani.com, which has asked visitors to sign a petition to recall Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg. How come?
It was a two-part petition. So one thing is to sign it in order to try to see if recall can become something that we could propose potentially through a ballot initiative in the state of New York. As you know, we don't have recall right. procedures like they do in California. But also, you know, one of the promises that I have made to voters is any district attorney that chooses to reclassify entire categories of crime, thus, in my opinion, violating their oath of office. Under Article 8, Section 13B, my dyslexia could be getting to me there. I believe it's under Article 8, Section 13B of the New York State Constitution. The governor has the authority to fire any of these 62 DAs around the state. Any DA that actually is making their streets far more dangerous, and we've seen it in New York now. In the last 5 months, crime is actually up 40% over last year. I think that's in direct relation to the fact that Alvin Bragg said in his third day in office that he was not going to prosecute resisting arrest or armed robbery as felonies.
Where do you stand, Andrew Giuliani, on the big lie? Do you believe the presidential election was stolen for Joe Biden?
So this is something, you know, when I've heard the big lie for, obviously not for 75 years because I haven't been along, but the big lie was always Holocaust denial.
Right.
So as somebody who's a member of the U.S. Holocaust Board, I find it really dangerous that the media is now allowing reclassification of this idea of the big lie. I could tell you if it was the other way around and the idea of the big lie came out of a conservative circle instead of actually the DCCC, that the big lie would never actually be allowed in political commentary like this. So as somebody who's on the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum, I really find that really concerning that we're using the term the big lie just with impunity when talking about the issues that we face regarding elections. So that's something that, you know, I would love to hear, you know, kind of taken out of our vocabulary on this.
I bet you would, but I still want to ask the question, do you think that it was stolen, this last election for Joe Biden?
So I read over 200 of the over 1,000 affidavits that ended up coming in to election headquarters of Americans who ended up seeing fraud right in front of their eyes. And this is stuff that we ended up pairing with video evidence. It's stuff that we saw where ballots were getting taken out in the middle of the night in Atlanta at 11 o'clock at night. It was putting up cardboard boxes at Cobalt Hall in Detroit. I think there was legitimate fraud that ended up happening in this 2020 election. And when you top that off with the geofencing, I think unfortunately what we had was reporters that did not want to do any investigative reporting because 97% of them ended up donating to Joe Biden. And you had a judiciary that did not have the guts to tackle this. And because of that, I think it's very likely that President Donald Trump was reelected on November 3rd, 2020.
Abortion is the big issue. You are, at least I think you are, against a woman's right to choose. Doesn't that work against you in a blue state like New York?
And again, this is how we use vocabulary in order to do this. I am pro-life. I believe that life begins at conception, and I'm a big believer in protecting life. And that's something that, you know, when I think about my daughter, who's nearly 6 months old, when I saw her the first time on the ultrasound machine, I knew that the most important thing in my life was going to be protecting her life. And meanwhile, 3 years ago in New York, we had the legislature and the governor celebrating abortions up to 39 weeks, through 39 weeks at this point, just crushing a baby's skull and celebrating it by lighting up Niagara Falls and lighting up the Empire State Building. That's a complete loss of morality here, Alan. And to me, if we're not calling that out and if we're trying to change the vocabulary around this, then that's really the scary part in this. I believe in protecting life, including the most vulnerable life, not just in the state of New York, but also in our great country.
So in the mass shooting in Buffalo, back to that, how would you prevent it? Would you say less guns, fewer guns?
I'd say mental health. We have to absolutely attack mental health in looking at this. I'd say making sure that our police officers not just are fully funded, but have the resources that they need in order to hold and detain somebody like this. And look, if there are red flag laws on the books, which there are, which I disagree with many of them, the truth is we need to make sure if they're on the books already that they're at least doing the job that they were passed to do. There were laws that were passed that were simply not followed here in this, and that's why this guy was able to obtain a weapon and then kill 10 people. But this is obviously a failure that happened long before he stepped into that Tops supermarket right there. But I would also want to be very clear on this. But I believe in this instance, if he is found guilty, the capital punishment should be on the table and that these victims' families should have a say in the process.
We have been talking to Andrew Giuliani on the Capital Connection, and we are delighted, Andrew Giuliani, that you joined us and that you were as forthcoming as you were. Thank you so much for being with us.
Alan, thank you for having me. Hope you have a great day.
You too.